I love me some Pitbull. You can't give me enough. He does remix everything in the world, though. But you know what? The songs make me smile.
He's got a formula.
He does, right? He gets you. You know what it is? His songs, because they're all old, whether they're old rap songs or old like Latino songs, like Hispanic music songs, it gets old people to like them too, which is smart. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense. That would make sense.
Yeah, he gets older people to like it too because of that. Man, he hasn't made anything new recently, though. I wonder what Pitbull's got.
Honestly, he hasn't made anything new in a while. he just said he remakes everything old. Well,
he hasn't released anything new. How about that? There you go. That's better said. You know what's new is that the Rams and the Seahawks will do battle for the first time this season. The Rams have a chance to get going, and they have everything right in front of them laid out over the next month or so, 3 of the next 4 weeks. They have a division opponent. The division kind of fell back to them a little bit here last week. The Bucks are on that list as well this month, so we're going to see how good the Rams are. Is DeMarco there? Can we chat with DeMarco? Oh, okay. DeMarco was there, and then he dropped. So we'll talk to DeMarco after I made that extravagant setup too and everything.
Well, next time, just say here's DeMarco. Don't give him all that. Yeah.
I mean, I was setting it up. It was like so nice. It was perfect, and then he wasn't there. So either way, LZ, you and I are going to be focused on what I think is a hell of a slate this weekend in the National Football League, which includes the Rams.
Which game are you most excited for?
So honestly, like obviously the Seahawks and Rams of all of them, but I think they're like when you look at all these games, there's some interest here, especially the late slate, right? There's Tua versus Herbert, right? Yep. That's going to be fun.
That's going to be fun.
I think even Buffalo and Arizona. If you would have told me a year ago that I would be interested in Buffalo and Arizona, or even 2 years ago, I would have told you you're nuts. There is no chance I'm spending 1 second on that game. But Josh Allen and Kyler Murray got me there. Then you've got Broncos Raiders. The Raiders are good. Like I'm ready for the Raiders. The Saints and Niners. Maybe that's probably the game I'll probably watch the least in the late window. But I am interested in the undefeated Steelers and Joe Burrow. Right, like Joe Burrow, who actually revealed today that when he grew up he hated scary movies and he never even watched Harry Potter and that he would spend his time watching SpongeBob. I found that
can't be my franchise QB.
I was going to say that. It's funny. However, though, that does explain why his quick release, right? Because he sees a lot of monsters coming to tackle him every week. So there is that. But anyway, is DeMarco there or no?
Yes.
Oh, there he is.
There he is.
Speaking of monsters who used to tackle quarterbacks, what do you think of that? Joe Burrow doesn't like horror movies. He's got too many of you guys running after him.
Well, that makes sense. Steve Young was at, what game was that? Against Chicago. He was sitting behind me doing his hit for the NFL or whoever he works for. And I was just thinking, I used to want to kill this guy. Like, literally. I wanted to, like, break him in half.
Right.
And now he's sitting right behind me, and I still have the same feeling. So, Burrows is exactly right. They aren't people. They're targets.
Well, I will sit here and I will say to you that if I were on his team and I hear that he was too scared to watch Harry Potter, I'd be a little concerned about his toughness.
Yeah, well, you know that the D linemen are gonna drag him for that one, right? Like, that's going
to happen. Wait. He said he was afraid to watch Harry Potter?
As a child, yes.
Yeah, there's an issue there, guys. Yeah. I'm not sure I can go to battle with a guy like that. Harry Potter? Is that scary?
No.
Not really.
Not even the least.
Even for a kid?
I don't think so. I mean, I've only seen a few of them. I haven't seen all of them, but...
Yeah. I mean, maybe for a kid it might be scary, but that didn't sound very tough.
Could you imagine, though, if he was going up against, like... Remember John Randall? He used to literally, like, look up people's, like, resumes and their family and their names and all that. He would drag poor Joe Burrow all over the place.
George, did you ever see the Road Warrior, Mad Max 2?
Yeah.
Okay, remember Lord Humongous?
Mm-hmm.
John Randall really thought he was Lord Humongous. Like, he really, if you told him he wasn't Lord Humongous, he would want to fight you. Like the Warrior of the Wasteland. He would do the entire mantra in front of your football team. He really believed he was that guy. And then he went out and backed it up.
He was a scary dude. And you're a big dude, and you were a scary dude playing, trying to break people. Who's the scariest, like, other D lineman that you were like, ooh, I ain't messing with that dude?
The scariest other D lineman. Oh, my God. Looking, I can't remember his name. There was a guy from Miami back in the 90s. He was huge. He was big, about 6'5".
Daryl Gardner?
Yes, him. Just looking at him, you would be scared. You'd be terrified. Warren Sapp, but for a completely different reason. Like, you'd look into Warren's eyes, and you would just know that something's wrong in there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he would be scary. Luther Ellis, from a power standpoint, I think Luther Ellis was like Bane's little brother, just in terms of power, you know? He was kind of scary. But John Randall takes the cake, no doubt.
Yeah. Speaking of scary, how scary is Seattle for the Rams, seeing that they are wounded coming off the loss?
Well, this is funny, man. Russell Wilson is a horror movie for defenses. Now, he's not going to hurt you physically. He's not going to draw blood. But what he does in the pocket and how he just gets out of trouble, it's unbelievable. You could have it defense perfectly. And this is funny. Talking about this from a Jared Goff perspective and his athletic ability, sometimes he's not athletic enough to correct Sean McVay's mistakes as a play caller. He just does not have that ability to extend plays. Well, Russell Wilson has that in spades, man. The worst play is the worst play call become touchdowns because of his ability. And his launch point and how it varies and how he puts the ball and where he puts the ball. It's unbelievable. And when he decides to actually advance the ball upfield to hurt you with his legs, it's all calculated. It's high level stuff. For a defense and a defensive coordinator, he is an absolute Friday the 13th Halloween horror movie to try to defend.
DeMarco, I'm sorry, go ahead, LZ.
So, with that being said, I characterize the game against Seattle as a must win. Because of 10 wins might not get you into postseason this year because of how tough the division is. Am I overstating the importance of this game?
No, it's a division game, and you're already down one because you lost to San Francisco, so you got to have it. Must win. You know, we're at mid-season, so there's a lot that could happen. I never thought I'd ever see Tom Brady walk off the field with 3 points. So we don't know how this thing's going to end. That's why we watch the games. But I would say you got to have it. You got to beat Seattle. You got to stay in the race in the West. This is a tough division, and the last thing you want to do right now is go down 0-2 in your own division. And you still got Arizona coming up. And Kyler Murray has been, you know, he's been more dangerous than Russell Wilson. I think he has 16 rushing touchdowns. The pace he's on is unbelievable. So, yeah, I mean, you need to pick up these wins when you can. And I like what Sean McVay had to say. You have to attack your opportunities. This is an opportunity. I know it's Seattle. I know it's Russell Wilson. He may win the MVP. But this is an opportunity within your division to get a win. That's how you have to approach it.
DeMarco Farr joining us here, Rams on-field analyst on the Celebrity Hotline, presented by Morongo. Play it safe, good times. Sean also talked about needing to capitalize in the red zone. With Seattle's defense being so porous, what do you need to see more of from the Rams to take advantage of that?
God, George, I hate that you said that Seattle's defense is bad. And when you look at the numbers and you see Seattle at the bottom of the league in terms of yards and points, it doesn't make sense. But you know Pete Carroll is going to fix this, right? So I hate the narrative that Seattle's defense stinks going into this game, because if they make the Rams sing for their supper and it's going to be tough on Jared Goff, then it's going to seem like the offense is bad. Pete Carroll is going to fix this. They're close to making plays. They're not as bad as the numbers imply. They had 7 sacks last week, you know, and they gave up 44 points. There's a lot of pluses there, but there's some minuses too, so... he's a defensive whiz. Ken Norton Jr. is a defensive whiz. They will get this thing figured out, and they've had a lot of injuries. That does scare me. But, yeah, I mean, when you think in the red zone with all the problems they do have, they're still having issues with rushing the passer. I know Carlos Dunlap is there, but still getting after him with four. I'll tell you, for instance, when I see a defensive line, when they rush four on their first obvious passing situation or the first play of the game, they all run stunts. That means they don't have any pass rushers. That means they have to game you to get pressure. So that's been an issue. So in the red zone, I think that comes up big. If you can't get after him with four, then you could be stuck with a quarterback sitting back there buying time, waiting for guys to get open. So that's been an issue, but you've got to be accurate. They can still make plays on you.
Are we disrespectful towards the Raiders?
How so?
Like,
you know what? Whatever ambivalence or lack of trust that you have in the Raiders, that's fair. Carr and the Raiders have earned it. You know, they have to show and prove to make their fan base believe. But if Carr continues to play this way, if they continue, is it Jacobs, the running back? I like the way he runs the football. I think they're tough. If they could ever figure out a way to play better defense and rush the passer, they could be in it at the end. I mean, I would believe what I see in the Raiders right now. I'm not sure if I would trust it, but I would believe in it. I think this version of Derek Carr can take you some places that you haven't been in a while.
Yeah, I agree. He's playing really well. You know what I mean? And you know, we had Mark Schlereth on yesterday, and he just says that when that offensive line is rolling and healthy, and they've had some issues with COVID and whatnot, but they can run the ball, right? And they can control the line of scrimmage. And you know this as well as anyone having played, that can take you a long ways for sure.
You know, when it turns cold outside, it's funny, you know, from the draft on or when the season ends, and you know how this goes, you guys are in radio, we start talking about the pipeline, what's coming into the NFL and how the NFL has changed and all this sort of stuff. And you're right, but once it turns cold, guys like Gruden and teams with a good line and a running game always play. They're always dangerous towards the end. Think about Derrick Henry. When it's cold outside, that guy becomes a beast. So that seems to be the way John Gruden likes to play it and the way he likes to coach it, and I think he's got a pretty good back. If he gets what he thinks was his starting offensive line on the field at the same time with that running back, yeah, they're going to be a tough out for anybody come late November, early December.
DeMarco Farr, Rams on field analyst, former Ram, and of course Super Bowl champion. Never former Super Bowl champion. You're always a Super Bowl champion for your whole life.
Yeah, you can't take back the ring. Yeah,
no. Nor was I trying to. It was a slip of the tongue. I apologize. Thank you, sir, for joining us as you always do. We appreciate your time, man. Thanks again.
Thank you, sir.
And LZ, I practice my Thriller dance, just so you know.
Oh, there we go.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about.
All right, brother. Whoa, okay. See
oh, he just hung up hard, didn't he?
Yeah, he was ready to go. Yeah. Oh, his like, son what? Took the phone before.
Play
that's
Tetris
how
or something?
Like, what yeah. yeah. All right, coming up next, basketball exploded during this show. We will recap what the hell happened, what it means for the Lakers and Clippers. Stick around. We're back in 3 minutes.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sedano and LZ with you here. Busy show today. If you missed any part of it, you want to go back and listen to everything we've discussed today between LZ and I. Obviously, Michael Thompson stopped by. Ramona was here for an hour because the world went crazy in the NBA for an hour. Of course, DeMarco joined us there. And then we've got coming up in about 6 or 7 minutes, Nota Begay of the Golf Channel, former PGA pro, of course, the Masters. Begins tomorrow, and coverage begins, I believe, at 10 a.m. Pacific on ESPN. So make sure that you are watching that. That will be something to keep a note of. By the way, I do have a cool stat on before I get to the basketball, a cool stat on Tiger Woods. Hold on. It is courtesy. I want to make sure we get this right. Courtesy of Brandel Chambly of the Golf Channel. Jack Nicklaus, LZ, won his sixth Masters in 1986, 23 years after his first Masters. He was ranked 33rd in the world going into that week. Coincidentally, if Tiger Woods wins this week, It will be his sixth Masters, 23 years after his first. He is also ranked 33rd in the world going into this week. Do you believe in numerology?
I do.
That is our sexy stat of the day, by the way. That's what you're hearing.
It's very, very sexy.
Yes.
I do believe in numerology. I just don't think that the numbers are going to work out for him.
For Tiger. We had our Tiger moment last year.
We did. And it would have been best for him to do what Pete Sampras did when Pete finally won a major after a long drought.
Right.
Which is say goodbye.
Yeah.
Right. That would have been epic.
Yeah. Yeah. Now drop the mic.
Drop the mic.
Yeah.
I just wanted to do it one more time. It would have been epic. Now we're forced to watch him like miss the cuts again.
Right. I know.
It's like 2017 all over again.
I was on a flight, man, flying back from some NBA game, watching the thing on TV. And I got to be honest, I cried a little bit when he did it, you know, because I saw him hugging his kids. Like, that part really is what got me. I was fine until the kids. And then, got me every time. You bring in the children, and I'm going to cry. That's where I'm at this stage of my life.
I guess so. He's a big old softy.
Yeah, I am. I cry at movies all the time now, too. Like, things get me. Hell, even commercials will occasionally get me these days. I still
cry during The Notebook. I'm sure that counts.
It does. It does count.
Because I'm like, why didn't you write back? Why didn't you write her back?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Come on. Speaking of crying, Houston, the city, may be crying because Russell Westbrook and James Harden could want out. Russell Westbrook for sure wants out. That has been reported by multiple different outlets. And the James Harden thing is like, some people think he is. Some people think he's staying. Some people think he may be leaving. That was Momo earlier. Let me ask you this. If Westbrook leaves, now granted, it also depends what they get back for Westbrook, but my guess is you're not going to get a ton. If you're James, you probably, that's your escape hatch, right? Like, if Westbrook's out, you just be like, yo, you got to trade me too, dog. You got to get value for me because you're not going to get better value than right now.
Well, I mean, I guess it kind of depends on what you get back from Westbrook too, right? Like,
right. It's
not like Westbrook's a you know, bum or anything like that. So, you might get a good player back, you know, and, you know, a draft pick, maybe you can get like a good talented rookie and maybe James reconsider. But I just feel, based upon the new ownership, new coach, just a whole new everything in Houston, you probably want a new roster too to build a team your way, develop the players your way, build your culture your way. It's hard to create culture when you have someone of James Harden caliber still right there, very much in his prime. So
yeah.
I would blow the thing up, as I've been saying over and over again. You ain't going nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I would have never guessed in my wildest dreams that this would have been – like, if you would have told me, like, before the playoffs started that this is where they would be, I wouldn't have necessarily believed it. Would you have bought it back then?
That this is where Houston would be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before the bubble?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. I have absolutely no faith in what they were doing down there.
Mm-hmm.
Like zero.
Right.
You know, and talking to Kevin McHale and understanding what the attitude was, you know, from the roster and some of those people were still there, I was just like, y'all ain't winning.
Yeah.
And even now, it's ridiculous to have someone who has finished in the top two or three in MVP as many years as James Harden has. It's ridiculous that we have to be like, oh my gosh, now he's playing defense. Like, that should have been part of the deal. So I'm just like, what are we doing? Am I taking crazy pills? Like, what is this?
It was like, Haley's Comet, he's playing defense now.
Right. It's like, you're not winning a chip with that. You're 30-some years old and now you decide to play defense? Man, stop.
Yes.
James Harden is a very talented player. He's probably one of the best offensive players to ever pick up a basketball. But you ain't winning-ish in terms of a championship if he's your best player.
Yeah, and by the way, kids, for those of you that don't know what the hell I just referenced in Haley's Comet, I do feel old. Greg, let me ask. Greg, do you know what Haley's Comet is?
Yeah, it comes up around every 75, 85 years.
Look at you. I am impressed.
Yeah.
Lord, did you know that?
I did, but I'm a freak for all that stuff.
Okay, yeah. It does. What do you, Greg, do you... Do you okay? Let me start with Greg. Do you know the last time Haley's Comet came around?
I was alive. I was alive when it happened. So it was 1985, maybe.
Laura?
I don't remember, but I know I probably wasn't if it was 1985.
LZ, do you remember when the last time Haley's Comet came around?
I'm assuming 2008 because we elected a black president and everything was crazy.
It was 86. Greg was very close.
Oh, very good.
So okay. Haley's Comet is projected to return in 2061. So that's 41 years from now. Ooh, man, LZ, you and I, do you think we'll still be doing this show? Probably not.
No.
In our 80s.
Yeah. No, if I am, something went wrong for both me and ESPN.
Or by the way, if we're doing it, that means that they got those rejuvenation pills. They found that fountain of youth. You know what I'm saying?
Well, if I find a fountain of youth, with all due respect, I'm not spending the next 40 years doing this. I'm going to be marketing it and trying to get rich.
Make money off of it.
Make money off of it. Hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. No doubt. All right. So we'll talk some Masters here in a second. Nota Begay of the Golf Channel, former pro tour member, will join us in just a moment. So the Masters gets going tomorrow. I know Wednesday said the Masters took place today, but the Masters gets going for real tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific on ESPN television. That'll be the case on Thursday and Friday, where coverage then switches to CBS over the weekend. The Golf Channel's own Nota Begay joins us here, courtesy of betonline.ag. And of course, Nota was a tour pro as well. Nota, thank you so much for taking the time. I want to ask you this out of the gate, because it's 2020 and everything is weird and we're playing the Masters in November. What would be the most significant change that a golfer would have to deal with as far as the course is concerned playing at Augusta in November?
Well, I mean, we're used to seeing when we turn on our televisions and watch the coverage at the Masters, just, you know, the lush green layout at Augusta National. And this year, because of the date and just the fact that the overseeded rye, which is that the cover that they lay over the Bermuda grass, just isn't quite as thick and lush as we're used to seeing. So in some places, you're going to see little spots of brown here and there, and but it's not going to affect the play too much. But that's what guys are really talking about right now. They're having to deal with some different lies around the greens, and we all know that chipping is such a critical part to winning the Masters. And then they're having to deal with just a slightly longer grass in the fairways, which could produce a couple errant shots here and there, just with the grass getting in between the face of the club and the ball. So those are a couple things that just guys are looking at.
In other sports, you know, whether it's the NBA and the Major League Baseball with concluded, MLS, et cetera, there have been conversations about asterisks for championships won this year because of what hasn't transpired that normally would. Is that still something that floats around in the golf world as well, that because it's COVID year, yeah, you kind of won, but some people are saying there's an asterisk involved?
I know that's an interesting discussion to have. I had this very same conversation with Steph Curry. We played a round of golf when the PGA Championship was in San Francisco this past August, and I said, you know, is there going to be an asterisk assigned to this championship or whoever wins it? And, you know, LA went on to win. He goes, absolutely not. He goes, from the majority of players that I've talked to in the league, you know, this is how we've determined was going to be the path to our championship. And there certainly won't be an asterisk next to the LA Lakers championship. And there certainly won't be an asterisk here. The golf course is as formidable, if not tougher, than what players would see in April, and I think that everyone's just happy to have the event. I know the membership and everybody that hosts it are going above and beyond to keep it safe, but also showcase the event and the world's best players.
Is Steph the best professional athlete, non-golfer, golfer, or is it Marty Fish or someone else?
He would be in a trio of guys that I would pick, which would include Steph, Marty, and Tony Romo. I think Tony edges them out if you were to play, 72-hole event on a championship golf course, just because I think that he has a few more shots and probably plays a little bit more on a regular basis than Steph does since Tony's retired. Marty has the smoothest action, so he has the swing that's most like a tour player's. But I think overall, Tony's probably the best of that trio, but those are the three best that I've seen, going to that Tahoe, American Century Celebrity Tournament, you know, the last 6 or 7 years.
Nota Begay of the Golf Channel joining us here, of course, courtesy of our friends at betonline.ag. Look, when you look at Tiger, obviously, we were actually just discussing this as you came on. You know, look, Jack Nicklaus won his 6th Masters in 86. It was 23 years after his first. He was ranked 33 in the world. A similar situation is set up for Tiger. If he wins this one, it could be his 6th. It would be 23 years since his first. He's also ranked 33 in the world. What is the expectation for Tiger Woods at this event?
To win. Bottom line, I've had a couple conversations over the years, especially amidst all the injuries and just uncertainty around recovery and whatnot. As far as, you know, when is that last tournament going to be for Tiger? And it's when he doesn't feel like he can win. It's when he doesn't feel like he can be competitive. And although he hasn't played a whole lot of golf this year and most of that golf hasn't been very good, he did show some good signs that the game does have quite a bit of potential in the second round of the Zozo Championship a couple weeks ago. He went out and threw up 8 birdies against 2 bogeys, and it was his best round of the week, but most importantly, he sort of got a chance to just see and feel what it was like to put together a great round. I really see him having an honest chance here to win this golf tournament, and that's going to be based upon just his experience. A lot of uncertainties around here. He'll have much fewer uncertainty around his approach than a lot of the rookies and first-timers that are just playing their first Masters.
You know, obviously, a lot of people are talking about the shot, right, from John Rahm on his birthday and all that good stuff, but he's also considered a favorite to actually win this event. Who else is up there that we should be looking at since we won't be, you know, looking at Tiger on Sunday?
Right, right. So the betting favorite right now at 8-1 is Bryson DeChambeau. Obviously, he just came off the U.S. Open win, hitting those towering drives and just kind of overpowering the golf course. He's been producing ball speeds this week over 200 miles per hour, which is a benchmark for the truly elite long hitters at our professional level. Second choice at 8.5-1 is Dustin Johnson. So those two are pretty interchangeable. I would argue that they're playing the best golf in terms of statistics leading into the Masters. Two players that I like at great value are Rory McIlroy, who made 29 birdies 2 weeks ago in the Zozo Championship, which is huge firepower, which is going to be a big asset here. And Bubba Watson. I really like the way Bubba's playing coming into Augusta. He's a 2-time Masters champion. So he knows his way around the track, and he comes in at a really good price. So I've put a few bucks on those guys, and I haven't left Tiger Woods off my sheet either. So I just think that there is a distinct chance that he could factor come the weekend.
Nota Begay of the Golf Channel, of course, brought to us by the folks at betonline.ag. So with DeChambeau, his whole body has transformed, obviously, over some time here. And, you know, that's he literally is kind of zigging while everyone is zagging, right? I know we saw Tiger kind of do some of this as his career went on, but Bryson has taken this to a different level. He looks like a bodybuilder out there. What do you make of how that has helped his particular game, and how would that his particular game translate at Augusta?
Well, I think anybody at any level, if you could say, hey, we're going to do this in the gym and it's going to produce an extra 20 to 30 yards on your tee shot and you're going to hit 3 or 4 clubs less into every hole, I think we'd all sign up. The only problem is half of us would get hurt and half of us would lose our ability to swing the golf club effectively. Putting that much muscle mass on is a challenge. It's difficult. You got to think about mobility and ranges of motion and different things that factor into the technical elements of the game. And he's done a superb job of, number one, not getting hurt. Number two, making his approach sustainable. But number three, the performance that he's been able to extract from these changes is remarkable. I mean, you know, I think people are saying, well, what about this experiment? I think we're through the experimental phase because he's proved the concept to be successful, and that proof came at the U.S. Open, at one of the hardest courses. There's a reason that previous U.S. Opens at Wingfoot, I believe it's in 1975, was called the Massacre at Wingfoot because the scores were so high. And he just went and he won by six shots. And I think he's changing the way that people look at the game. He's bringing a lot of non-golfers' eyes and attracting them to the game because we love power, we love distance, and that's exactly how he's going to attack this golf course this week.
Real quick, Britney Spears lost her bid to remove her father having control over her career, and now she says she's never performing again. Is this devastating news, or should I get over it?
Personally, I'm devastated. I mean, I love Britney Spears as an entertainer, and I think we should invite her out to more golf tournaments. That'd be great. But you need to get over it. I mean, there's a lot of other great entertainers out there that you know, I think could deserve your attention.
There you go. Fair enough. There it is. Nota Begay of the Golf Channel, of course, brought to us by betonline.ag. Hey, man, thanks for hanging out with us. Enjoy the golf this weekend, and hopefully we will talk to you again soon. Take care.
Thanks for having me, fellas. All right.
Thank you, sir.
There it is. Take care. There he is, Nota Begay. Look, you know, you do need to get over it, LZ. There's not much you can do about it. Yeah,
it's fresh news.
I know, but he did say he was also devastated, Nota. But
I mean, you know, never performing again.
You got to be strong. You know, told you to got to be strong. You got to be strong. You know,
I was trying to be strong. I thought she was going to win her court case.
She's strong. You got to be stronger because she's stronger. Okay.
I knew I should have went to Vegas to see that show when I had a chance.
Yeah. Don't forget every weekday. You get your chance to win a car. We're giving it away November 30th. It's a 2021 Mazda CX-5 Sport with a grand in the glove box. Take a road trip on us. How? Each and every weekday. Listen to Mason in Ireland in the 3 o'clock hour for the road trip destination of the day. Hopefully you write it down. And in the 5 o'clock hour with us each and every weekday, you'll hear Sal Gonzalez give you the cue to call, our man from Culver City Mazda. And when you hear it, be caller 7 with the correct destination of the day, and you win a virtual key that could start that brand-new 2021 Mazda CX-5 Sport with $1,000 in the glove box. The station that loves you, 710 ESPN with our month of giving. And thanks again to our friends at Culver City Mazda. Crosstalk is up next with Scotty Kapp. LZ, you're going to have to handle this on your own because I literally have to run and jump in a car to go do a SportsCenter hit. But I know that it is all in good hands with you.
You really believe that?
I mean, I do. I'm hopeful.
That's awesome.
All right. Have fun.
Yes, sir.
All right. Scotty Kapp, Crosstalk with LZ in 3.5 minutes.
Sedano and LZ minus Sedano. But, hey, we got Kapp with us for Crosstalk. What's up, Kapp? How you feeling, brother?
Yo, what's happening tonight?
Oh, I don't know. You know, a little bit of basketball madness. But before we get into that conversation, do you know whose birthday it is today?
Whose birthday is it today? Today's November 11th, 11-11-20. Whose birthday is it? Yesterday was the Marine Corps' 245th. You were just talking about Britney Spears. I don't know who.
I will give you a hint.
Oh. Okay. Okay, wait. Yeah, Titanic. Celine, huh?
Close. Leo.
Not Celine. Who?
Leo.
Oh, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes, it's his birthday. How dare you go Canadian before you go Leo?
Well,
that's crazy.
I mean, you played Celine. I thought this was Celine Dion's birthday.
No, it's the only song I can think of that immediately makes you think about. And you were so close. You were like, oh, the Titanic. And then you picked the one person who didn't sink on the boat. Celine.
I know, Celine. Now, today's Leonardo DiCaprio's what birthday, LZ?
Let's look it up. He is 46.
46 years old.
46. Now, here's a question for you.
Uh-huh.
What is your favorite Leo movie? And if you tell me you don't like him as an actor, Crosstalk is officially over.
No, I wouldn't do that. Okay. I would not do that. I wouldn't do that to you. Couple things here. I want to say that, and I'm embarrassed to say this. I, you know what? I shouldn't even say it, but I'm going to just say it. But I'm embarrassed to say it just so you know. I really haven't seen the entire Wolf of Wall Street.
It's okay. I don't hate you for that.
Okay. All right.
It was fine.
It seems strange, though, to even have seen any of it, but not to have seen all of it. And it's just one of those movies that's really long, and I just have to dedicate the time, and I haven't done it yet.
Yeah, it was fine. You know, it wasn't terrible. I don't think it was his best film project. He was fine in it. He was, you know, he's Leo. He's great. But the film itself, I thought was fine. I've never watched it, you know, again. I saw it once, and it was fine.
I would say when I think of Leonardo DiCaprio, one film that comes to mind really quickly, what was the name of that movie where he gets eaten by a bear?
The Revenant.
Yeah, that was a scary movie.
He won an Oscar.
God, it was scary.
Well, I mean, he was eaten by a bear. I could see why that would frighten you.
I know, but like I've gone out hiking since, and mm-hmm. I've got my head on a swivel at all times. Like I'm petrified of being Leo being eaten by a bear.
Well, you know. Stay out of the forest, you know, and stop looking for an Oscar role, and you probably won't get eaten by a bear.
Yeah, probably right. How about you? You have one? What's your favorite?
Oh, man. You know, I go back to What's Eating Gilbert Grape, The Departed, Inception,
yeah,
The Revenant, Catch Me If You Can, Django Unchained. I thought he was absolutely ridiculous in Django. So as you can tell, I'm a big Leo guy. I even like The Great Gatsby. I know a lot of people were kind of indifferent on it, but I've actually have watched that movie more than once, and I just kind of like the style of it, you know?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you see that?
I did see that. That was fine. That was fine. I saw it once. It was fine. It was fine. Who's the sports version of Leo?
I would say right now, I'd have to say Tom Brady.
Yeah. Yeah. Not bad. Not bad choice. Except Tom got married and he had kids. Leo, you know.
Still single, huh?
He out there, man. He wilding. I ain't mad at him, though, bro. Do it as long as you can. Go full Clooney if you can, man.
Has he, has Leonardo DiCaprio dated Jennifer Aniston yet?
I don't know. Let me think. If Leo had dated Jennifer, would Brad still want to do movies with him afterwards? I'm kind of funky that way, but I don't know Brad's personality, so I couldn't tell you. Could you handle that if someone like dated your ex? Would you be cool hanging out with that person?
So this is such a relevant topic, by the way, because, you know, LZ, I'm divorced, and I wish that my ex-wife was as happy as can be, and I wish that she was dating somebody awesome, and then you know what I'd really hope is like she could get married, which would be just phenomenal. That'd be great. And you know, and I date a woman who I've been with for a year and a half, and she's divorced too. So like there's always this strange, awkward kind of if we see her ex or if we kind of run into mine. I don't know, you got that issue in any way?
I don't, I just make sure we don't visit certain cities
Where you might run into somebody.
Yeah. I was like, oh man, you don't need to come to DC. Ain't nothing there. You all right? Just stare you at.
I have a question for both of you guys.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. What show did Leo, was it like he was part of the cast?
Family Ties?
No.
I don't remember Leo and Family
Ties. I know
Ties.
It.
Oh, Growing Greg Pains. Knows it. Yes. Yeah,
Growing Pains. I knew it was one of those shows. I knew it was one of those shows.
You get Growing a W Pains. Today, Greg.
Wait, why can I get a V? Like half a W?
Okay, sure.
Because I knew it was an 80s sitcom at least, right?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. Cap, did you know that?
Growing Pains, no.
Great show.
I'm having to look it up.
Did you say great show?
I like that show.
It was a great show. Oh, I'm with you on there,
Laura. Who was in that show?
Kirk Cameron.
Oh, Alan Thicke.
Yep.
Yeah. Thicke. Wait, and so what did Leonardo DiCaprio have to do with that show?
He was
like a neighbor kid or something, right?
He was kind of like the unofficial adopted kid of the family kind of thing.
Was he on a lot?
He was for a while.
He was for a while. They jumped the shark at this point. You know how it is when the ratings start to sink and you need a jolt, so you add in some strange character. It's like when Urkel had a twin.
Yeah.
You know, instead of canceling the show. It's like, you should have just canceled the show. That would have, you know, been a lot better than doing that for.
Yeah.
For
like when Laverne and Shirley moved from Milwaukee to LA.
Oh, geez, that was terrible.
That's jumping the shark.
That what is was Married with Children brought seven in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sex in the City. She got serious about relationships. It was like, no, it was much better when it was always touch and go.
Yep.
And I do mean touch and go.
What was the name of the show with Gary Coleman and Todd Bridges? What was the name
Different
of that
Strokes.
Show? Different Strokes. What you talking about, Willis? That show when all of a sudden Mr. Drummond, was that his name? Was that the dad's name? Yep. When they introduced that little redheaded kid. What was his name, that little kid?
Sam, oh, yeah.
And he wore like suspenders, like he's little Larry King.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, that's when they jumped the shark.
That's when they jumped the shark. And then, of course, Fonzie actually did jump the shark, so that was even worse. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. What you got going on for the show tonight?
Let's see. What, you know, today's Veterans Day, LZ, as you are well aware. And I have, over the years, being in radio and in media, I've had some really amazing opportunities to be around the U.S. military. A couple years ago, actually, this is going back several years ago, but I flew from North Island, San Diego on a what's called a COD plane. And we took off from North Island and we flew out and we landed on the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier. And I was out there with some guys who played for the Chargers at the time, a guy named Donnie Edwards, who was a really great linebacker in his career, a guy named Darren Bennett, who was an Australian punter who revolutionized punting in the NFL, and a guy named David Binn, who was the long snapper of that team. He played his college ball at Cal. So we all flew over to this aircraft carrier, and we watched these F-18s fly and land on the deck of the plane, and then one comes down and lands, and out pops George W. Bush.
Wow.
And about a day or two later, because we stayed on the boat as the boat cruised in, and Bush had this mission accomplished all over the USS Abraham Lincoln. I was standing right there. So I had these insane...
So it's your fault. Okay.
Well, I mean, the mission was hardly accomplished. Little did we know at the time, you know? Yeah. So anyway, I've had these great experiences around the military. And I just, on a day like today, I don't mean to get overly sappy about it, but I'm very serious about just saying my thank yous to whoever has served. So on a night like tonight, LZ, I'm going to bring on a gentleman by the name of Captain Ben Harrow. If you've never heard of him, you got to Google him. But a few years ago, Bill Belichick invited him to come speak to the Patriots in advance of the Super Bowl. He had both of his legs blown off in Afghanistan, and he'll tell his story tonight. It's incredible. And coming up a little bit later on tonight, former Green Beret Nate Boyer, whose name you may have heard around because he was the guy that convinced Colin Kaepernick to go from sitting to kneeling.
Yep.
So we're going to talk to Nate Boyer a little bit later on tonight as well. We'll throw in Eric Williams and talk about the Rams and the Seahawks. I heard you guys talking a lot of NFL tonight. And we're going to get to a bunch of stuff. But what was George talking about? Was he exaggerating? Every time I heard him say, the NBA's blowing up, I'm like Googling things like NBA blowing up.
Well, you know, he gets excited over the slightest of rumors. But I will say, what's happening in Houston is totally a blow up. There's report. Total situation. PJ Tucker's not happy. Austin Rivers isn't happy. The backcourt's not happy. Guys have been fired. Houston is blowing up. That much is true.
All right. Well, I'm going to get to that then at some point tonight.
All right. Well, you have yourself a fantastic show, and I'm so glad to see you respecting the veterans that way. That's awesome of you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. LZ loved it tonight. You know I'm like the biggest Sedano and LZ fan there is right now, just so you know.
Oh, I appreciate it. Your check is in the mail. All right. Have a good show. Greg, Laura, fantastic work. George, if you're in your car listening, great job as always. Kaplan's up, and I'm out.